Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to Brave New World programme. I'm John Harrison. Perhaps it's to state the obvious, but governments have always been concerned with supplying their population with food, and cutting food supplies of enemies has always been a highly successful way to bring an enemy nation to its knees. The days of worrying about food security have perhaps gone, in the West at least, but one thing that seems to be happening instead of this is intranational differentiation between the quality of food supplies. Large sections of a population can eat bad quality food, suffer from obesity and lack of energy, whilst at the same time, a smaller section eats good food, is fit, healthy and creative. To talk about this, and welcome to the program, Alexander Oleskin, a Doctor of Science at the Moscow State University. Alexander is an expert in the link between biology and human societies. Welcome to the program, Alexander.
Thank you.
Now, how credible is the thesis which I was just hinting on in my introduction, that there are differentiation between the diets of different sections of populations?
Well, to begin with, different social strata, different classes, different nations, regions, clearly differ in terms of both their diet and their features of character. Here I apologize. My professional competence is limited to the microbiological aspect or side of the matter. The microbes which live down in the belly, in the gut, they change very drastically the composition of the food we ingest. Like a customs officer, they, the little bugs, go through the food we take in. They remove some of the food components and at the same time enrich food with their own products. These products seem to have an impact on our nervous system, on our psyche, and therefore on our behavior.
Is there a link then, a direct link, between what you eat and the way you feel as a human being and your mental state?
I guess a qualified yes, because food is not the only problem we are facing. Stress level. And Chinese, for example, lead a very stressful kind of lifestyle. So even the rich ones, they tend to be obese, not because of the food, but because stress has both direct and indirect effects on your weight. The direct effect is because it changes your neurochemicals, which directly are responsible for regulating fat production, lipid production, and indirect because they increase our appetite. They increase our very desire to eat. And Chinese are stressed, and even the most affluent ones, particularly because their philosophy is that wealth is temporary.
I challenge you on that, whether it's really to do with stress and more to do with just the carbohydrates, with bad food.
I think, well, China perhaps is, a questionable example, because I had my own experience. I tasted some Chinese food. Yeah. It's not very carbohydrate rich. Honest, I mean, at least the region I was in, one of the maritime regions, like, you know, the place around Hong Kong.
But these young people are eating chocolates and, Western food and cereals and with sugar on them and all this.
They try to be more European than Europeans.
They try to be more European than American than American.
Yeah, that's correct. But, I mean, here what this problem boils down to, what I just wanted to talk about, is classifying people into types. I think the same kind of food will have different effect with different types of people. And what is the differentiating factor? This is at least one of the criteria, is the composition of the microbiota. Okay. There are three kinds of people. They're called the Prevotella people, the Ruminococcus people, and the Bacteroides people, depending on the predominant microbial species, which live in their gut. And it's still debatable whether there are these three distinct, clearly distinct types, or whether these are just three coordinate axes, and each person is located somewhere on this three-dimensional coordinate system. Maybe these types do overlap, actually, but still.
Okay, but there's different kinds of microbiotics that live in people's guts.
Yes.
Do they come about because of the food that people eat?
A chicken and egg issue. What comes first?
Yeah.
Because primary colonization, the primary of the intestine, I mean, everybody, I mean, it's generally accepted, occurs very early, right after birth. And now there are even views that even during pregnancy, it's wrong that the fetus is completely sterile. It might be not sterile.
Dr. Oleskin, it's a fascinating conversation we've already been having about this possible link between what we eat and who we are. But, okay, Len, let's suppose that your theory is correct, that it all depends on what kind of micro entities we've been colonized with at birth or before birth or when we're very small. But then again, does the class that we belong to, for example, people in the British upper class, will be, when they're very young and during pregnancy, mothers, they will be exposed to a different kind of food than and microorganisms, bacteria, than people down the food line, poorer people. Well, so again, we come back to this differentiation of types of people according to the food that they live and therefore their socioeconomic background.
Well, I certainly have to agree with that in general, except that what adds an additional, let's say, complicating factor is the existence of the microbiota in between. Between you talking about the two, let's say, variables, or the two, let's say, systems, the food as a system and the organism, the human mind, the brain, the psyche. But there is something in between, this intermediate link. And this is extremely important because, like, you know, like a customs office or like a border control, frontier control, they just go through whatever enters the, in this case, the stomach, and then decide whether or not to let it enter the bloodstream as well. So this is important. And once again, I certainly do acknowledge different social strata, different classes. Yeah, they belong to, they lead completely different lifestyles. I mean, this goes without saying. But I think in, a kind of encouraging news for the lower classes, to which I almost belong, being just a modest professor, is that making good use of your microbiota, you can still enjoy your living and perhaps avoid the bad, debilitating or fattening effects of the low-protein food you are talking about.
Perhaps also one of the factors we should be considering is the factor of exercise, because being a low-paid university professor in Russia also means that you use your feet a lot.
Yes.
Many of the obese people I know in my country and in the States and in Western Europe as a whole, and I think the same goes for Australasia, don't travel very much on their feet. They use private vehicles, or they use the metro, or they use some other means of transportation to get them around. They can afford it. Whereas before, they weren't able to afford it, and perhaps they were a lot thinner. So perhaps it's a combination of factors. Perhaps it's a combination of what they take in through their mouths, but also what they do with their bodies or don't do with their bodies.
Well, this is correct, but I think with me, walking is not just because I am walking, not because I just try to save my money.
Yeah.
Also, I do it intentionally because, for example, when I want to get ready for my own lecture, even getting ready for this interview, I decided to take a walk, a relaxing and walk, which also helps me concentrate on the whole matter. So I guess, yes, still another point is once again that people are different. I mean, traditionally, people were classified or subdivided into four temperaments. The sanguine, the phlegmatic, the choleric, and the melancholic, right? So presently, there are more, let's say, there are modernized versions of these classifications. And one option is to somehow hook it up with the microbiota. As I told, there are three types of people which have different compositions of their microbiota.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Alexander. Let's take a short break here.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World program. Today I'm talking to Dr. Alexander Oleskin, Doctor of Science at Moscow State University, an expert in the link between biology and human societies. In the first half of the program, we've been talking about the biological link between what we eat and our state of mind. And I'd like to pursue this subject now, Dr. Oleskin, and ask you, if these people who now are obese were eating a completely different kind of food, would they still be obese?
Well, as far as the data in the field of genetics are concerned, I am perhaps superficially familiar with modern genetics. There are genes predisposing people for obesity. And those who have those genes will still tend to put on weight they'll suffer. They'll, in order to keep fit, to keep healthy, they have to put up with the fact that they put on weight.
So the people
being
who
unhealthy
are genetically,
or being fat.
Right, so
this
the people
is their
who
choice.
Are genetically predisposed to putting on weight in comparison to other people, in a society where everybody eats the same, they will be larger than other people.
Definitely.
So the people in the 1980s, go back to China, who I met, nobody was obese then. There just weren't obese people, full stop. Now, if you would put that down to a different diet then, but surely then we're back to the same argument.
Yeah, I certainly do agree that, well, it would be kind of stupid to deny the fact that your social status, your wealth level, there's something very meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, otherwise, I wouldn't work so hard, for example, if this were not so important to me, for example. But nevertheless, a kind of encouraging fact is that our microbial friends, to some extent, can, so to speak, relieve the trouble or mitigate the effects of a poor, unhealthy diet, to some extent, if we know how to deal with them correctly. And this is where my professional interest kind of steps in.
Okay, so in conclusion, if you like, if it's possible to make a conclusion here, and if we can't make a conclusion, it's probably a good thing because it actually exposes a lot of the stuff that we've been reading about this subject is possibly a big controversy theory. I would just like to then suggest to you that you say outright that, in fact, we cannot make a clear distinction between the food that we eat and the condition of our bodies and the state of our minds. We cannot make a clear, direct link.
Oh, well, at least such a link would nevertheless imply that we take into account other important background factors, which also play a role. The microbiota being one of them, by the way.
Not the same as what you were saying before, because now you're saying that the food is important,
it is,
but it's not the only important thing.
That's it. I never claimed it is completely unimportant.
Okay.
I even wanted to say that it's important in some ways which are less well known, less familiar to most people.
Yeah.
Apart from providing us with energy, apart from providing us with nutrients, food also provides us with signal substances, pheromones. And this is an additional aspect of its role. They both affect the microbes we have in our bellies and affect our body itself.
Okay, so last question.
Yes.
Are people with a lower income level more likely to eat food which will make them fatter than people of a middle or a higher income level?
I think so. Well,
you think there is that possibility?
Yeah, well, sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Because bread, potatoes, and so forth are cheaper, easier to obtain.
Yeah.
Yes, but I guess the dependence of a person's weight on a person's income is very curvilinear, because at the very lowest part, near the origin of the axis, we have a very lean person, simply because he is starving or she is starving.
Okay.
Then certainly there will be a part where we have obesity, then leaner people, and then perhaps people who put on weight again just because they're very socially important, they need a lot of energy, they have a lot of stress, and they eat a lot. So not only the poor, I mean, belong to the obese ones. Also, among important political leaders, take, for example, the North Korean leader. Can he? You call him, low-income guy?
Sure, right.
But is he lean?
Right. Okay, final question.
Okay.
about politics. Do you think that there's an attempt by governments to somehow control their populations by limiting the amount of food that the lower-class people with lower incomes have available to them?
I think this is really what is very often called biopolitics in the literature.
Biopolitics.
Because this is the way the government, the political system in general, can influence your biological nature, your biological self. And I should say, only a very stupid or silly or selfish government would just let people, poor people, just starve, or at least keep them undernourished. Because what a government really aims at is making people obedient, law-abiding, predictable, hardworking, smiling, and happy, at least, because this is a prerequisite for a stable social political regime.
It sounds like,
without revolutions and rebellions.
Like, okay, we've got to stop the program, but it sounds like all the qualities you're describing are exactly the qualities of people who eat low-quality food. You know, they're happy, they're not thinking, and they're obedient.
Well, at least I should say that's where biopolitics steps in,
okay.
Because it should be a very ingenious, let's say, dietitian who should develop this kind of food which will make people not just feel their face, but just feel happy and hardworking, be hardworking and efficient and satisfied with their government and even worshipping and deifying that government.
Yeah. Thank you very much indeed, Professor Alexander Leskin, Doctor of Science at Moscow State University, for being with us today. And you really are an expert in the link between biology and human society. It's been fascinating to talk to you. Thank you very much. And thank you, listeners, for being with us today. Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye.